Bobby.
Welcome to Men in Charge. I'm Tony Flynn.
Yes, welcome. I'm Kevin.
Before my co-host has his say, listener, I should point out that you're now listening to the end of today's episode. Ever since we hired the computer that wrote the television show Lost, it has been trying to convince us to do an episode where we present the final shocking moments of an episode at the beginning, as a kind of teaser.
The hope is that
you'll tune in for the entire show to see how things develop, or at least that you'll leave your radio on while you clean the bathroom and come back at the end to see how we got here.
There is such a thing as over-explaining, you know.
Well, then, over to you, Kevin.
I'm Kevin Decker, and like Tony said, welcome to Magical Fish in Charge. The fish in the title is plural.
The title is Men in Charge.
That's what I said. Men in Charge.
Yes, listener, Kevin has been turned into a large, blue, magical, wish-granting fish.
Hello, Manly Druthers, the original magical wish-granting fish here. Kevin received the first of his three wishes from me last episode.
And my first wish killed Tony.
Almost killed Tony, Kevin.
Oh, right. Almost killed Tony. That's right. Welcome back from the brink of death, Tony. Today's Men in Charge episode is aptly named Mystery Fish Made Me Sick.
It wasn't a mystery to me. The largest number of fish sandwiches I ever ate on my own was 49, and that's a far cry from 1,000 all at the same time.
Well, Kevin, are you ready for your second wish? Or would you like to hear more about the public radio show I hosted called Men of Tomorrow?
Well, I was bored with the story last week, so
Kevin will hold off on his second wish, and that's a unilateral decision on my part.
That's great, because we had some of the most memorable segments in all public radio at the time. Are you familiar with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
No.
Yes.
Well, we didn't come up with that one, but I hear it's pretty popular. We did an early version of what we called What the Missus Doesn't Know.
Didn't the missus of the title find out what was unbeknownst to her just by listening to the program?
Women weren't allowed to listen to the radio in the 40s, Tony.
Yeah, Tony.
Ah, those were the days. And now, Chandler's Mints brings you Men of Tomorrow. Tomorrow's men will be smarter, faster, wiser, and may even have no need for women. Sponsored by Chandler's Mints, the official mint of Enrico Fermi and the men of the Manhattan Project.
Now that was cross-merchandising.
Men of Tomorrow was all about the inevitable remasculinization of society that would occur after the war ended. After all, the We Can Do It posters featuring Rosie the Riveter were just knockoffs of the Ralston the Riveter posters before Ralston went off to France and was impressively crushed under a Panzer Tiger tank.
Ouch.
How else did Men of Tomorrow promote the testosterone agenda?
Well, it's funny you say that. There was Dr. Voronoff's segment about injecting ground-up monkey testicles under the skin to increase virility. That one was called Speaking Bollocks.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
And, of course, Take This Bump to the Dome, hosted by Lorenzo Niles Fowler. Always wanting to measure the heads of guests on the show. Obsessed, in my opinion. Of course, he did say that the enormous craniosagittal ridge on my old pal and co-host Lucky Luckstrom indicated that he could drink a lot heavier than the average Joe and survive it.
That was your co-host whose liver failed, right? You see my point?
No. But say, now I'm starting to remember how another of my co-hosts, Sully McGaffey, left the show.
Do tell.
Well, as you know, it was the roaring 40s. Men were men, women were women, and people who would later identify as transgender were just confusing to the rest of us.
Say, why didn't you get drafted if this was during the war?
Bone spurs.
Bone spurs? That's ridiculous. What about Sully and your other co-hosts?
Bone spurs. And believe me, the irony is now patent since bone spurs grow on your feet, eh?
You don't have any feet! Continue with the boring story.
Urban City was a hoppin' place at that time, especially if you were a guy. After we shut down the radio station, Sully and I used to head down to Mort Rothenberg's place, the back room. It was a speakeasy during Prohibition that turned into a small-time meat rendering room after the ban on liquor ended. And then it was converted into a bourbon and burger joint right before the war started.
The standards for public health were obviously lower back then.
Don't speak too soon, Tony. The new America is loosening health and food regulations so that we can all be a lot more free. Freer to contract bovine flu and smallpox in the coming years.
Please don't interrupt. Anyway, we were headed to the back room one night, but it was in kind of a bad neighborhood.
You were accosted?
Not yet. I had just had a few nips from my hip flask back in the studio. The real accosting would happen once we got to Mort's place. Well, in a back alley, we were laid into by a real mean gang of CPAs. Certified Public Accountants. You wouldn't believe how vicious these gangs were. The CPAs controlled Urban City from Assault and Battery Park all the way over to 57th Street, which is where the tax auditor gang took over. The CPAs laid into Sully pretty bad.
I assume you tried to help.
Yeah, I ran for help, but it was too late. Ultimately, Sully was done in by a name tag.
A name tag?
Yeah, after these deadly CPAs knocked off, they put their name tags on the brim of their caps with a pin facing outward. You know the kind of unsanitary conditions these office types work in. Those pins carried every sort of disease and bacteria.
We are quite familiar with the hidden dangers of name tags.
But how could you be killed by a name tag?
You have to land on it just right.
And what were you doing during this fatal name tag assault?
Well, I had run into the back room to use their phone. Then I remembered Mort didn't have a phone, so I took a drink to steady my nerves. I found that that didn't actually work, so I had another.
Yeah, and so on and so forth.
And by the time I got back to the alley where the attack happened, Sully had been released from this mortal coil, never again to say his trademark radio catchphrase. And so I said, "Hey, sugar, are you rationed?" Ah, if I had had a hand, I'd be holding it over my heart right now, remembering Sully.
And then there were two.
That's right. The team had really broken up. With Lucky Luckstrom and Sully gone, it was just Laszlo and me on the show. Of course, the deaths of Lucky and Sully really boosted ratings. But I like to think that was my particular flavor of other deprecating humor that made those last years of Men of Tomorrow so successful.
And what was Laszlo's contribution?
Funny sound effects? I forget. It was all so long ago now.
Kevin, I recognize the symptoms of selective memory. That's exactly what you and I experience when our cast members ask when they'll start getting paid.
Well, now that the fish story has come to an unnatural stopping point, I think I'm ready to let loose with my second wish.
Actually, Kevin, this banter has gone on long enough. I see our engineer giving us the high sign.
I didn't think we had an engineer.
He's right behind the glass there.
I don't see anybody there.
That's because it's a two-way mirror. Why don't you take your mind off the problem by announcing the first segment?
Well, we'll start off the segments today, Tony, with the dedicated surfing zone syndicate. Mr. Capablanco wants you to be able to enjoy the local beach, but not this part. It's just for people who are surfing and learning how to surf.
And he's enforcing that restriction.
Yeah.
So watch out on the beach.
After that, it's a message from one of our new sponsors, Ken Jennings Altercation Station. He's got the north-facing side of a kiosk in the Lower Heights Mall, and it's a place to kind of slug out your frustration, sublate your anger at the world, you know, for cheap, fairly cheap.
For cheap.
Yeah.
Because pretty much during the day, we want to punch 30 or 40 people
at one
time or another.
This is a legal way to do it. And also, they clean up the mess.
That's right.
You know,
Hoses are ready at Ken Jennings Altercation Station.
How many times have you had to pick up teeth from your kitchen floor? Never again.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Mine or anyone's.
And finally today, Tony, don't we have another adventure of our favorite library bouncer?
We do. Johnny Hambone was engaged in misbehavior at a conference, and he's in jail now, and he meets his new cellmate, Big Nell.
She's so tough that she rejected the women's prison and asked to be put into a men's.
That's pretty
incredible.
It is. She prefers bunking with men, and that's bad news for Johnny Hambone.
Don't you just love the beach, Sam?
I can't believe we scored spring break in San Jacinto. Ever since the teeny boppers forsook this place for spring break because it was so early 21 cent, they've been trying to reestablish their tourist trade through great deals.
You sound like a tourist agent. Just relax and catch some rays.
Ha ha ha. You forget I am a tourist agent, Maggie.
That's right. Because although the script for this segment assumes we've been married 5 years, we as fictional characters are just meeting each other for the first time.
Hey.
Who's blocking out the sun?
Yeah, and somebody just kicked sand on me.
Well, well, well. What do we have here, Largo?
A couple of bathing beauties, Aiden. Ain't they cute?
Could you move? You're blocking the sun and thus spoiling my wife's suntan.
Yeah, and watch where you put your feet. This is a public beach.
Hey, Aiden, you got a light?
It's also a non-smoking beach.
Yeah, I do. Here.
Thanks.
Ow! Watch where you throw your matches, buddy. There's a $154 fine for littering here, you know.
Maybe they want to, move, Largo. What do you think?
Yeah. You don't want to stay on this dangerous stretch of San Jacinto Beach. What with the sand being thrown up at random and all the matches flying.
Like I said, this is a public beach. Leave us alone.
But see, there's a problem, darling.
What is the problem?
She don't see it.
No, she don't. I bet he don't, either.
See what?
You see that tent with all the boogie boards and various sizes of wetsuit?
Yeah, so what?
Can't you read the signs? This is a dedicated surfing zone, sweetheart. Now why don't you and your boyfriend...
Husband?
Why don't the two of you move along? Up or down the beach doesn't matter. This part is for surfers and those learning to surf.
This is absurd.
Not at all. If I had a pretty little pale husband with very little chest hair who thinks he can pull off a Speedo on an American beach, I'd want to protect him. It's just self-interest.
I mean, anything could happen on a stretch of beach like this. The flying matches are just a start.
Seriously? What could happen? Those posted signs just say Pablo Escobar Surf School. They're not official. There's probably no law establishing this as... What did you call it?
A dedicated surfing zone, sir. Now move along.
Look, I mean, let's be honest. We can't move that way because of the beach volleyball.
Beach volleyball, she says.
Stupid sport, I say. How is one supposed to get purchase in the sand for leaping about the volleyball court to retrieve the ball?
One is always getting sand in their loafers, it seems to me.
Whatever. And we can't go that way, because that's where all the local kids go to play with their drone aircraft.
Okay, those drones is a problem.
The noise!
I comes to the beach for some peace and quiet, not overgrown mosquitoes dive-bombing me.
So you can see why we would appreciate some privacy and peace and quiet on this stretch of beach.
I cannot see that at all.
I am blind to that notion. Mr. Capablanco also believes that this area of beach is strictly reserved to the surf school.
And who is this Mr. Capablanco? Can I complain to him?
The boss ain't to be disturbed on the day of his daughter's wedding.
Oh, that ain't today. That's next Tuesday. Today the boss said he was going all the way up to Bonito Point to get some Italian water ice.
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, the Pablo Escobar Surf School would like to kindly ask you to uproot your umbrella, fold your towels, and move. This is a dedicated surfing zone.
What if we don't want to move?
Hey, Aiden. He says, what if they don't want to move?
Yeah, well, we don't have no contingency if they say that.
Really? Shouldn't we break his little fingers or something? Or at least steal his Dean Koontz mass market paperback book?
That's my book!
Hey, don't kick sand at me, lady. This suit costs $350.
Yeah, this is all messed up. Let's go over to the tent and get some new instructions, Largo.
Whatever you say, Aiden.
Whew. I feel like somehow we just beat the system.
Actually, to those inappropriately three-piece suited gentlemen...
With fedoras?
Yeah, with fedoras. To them, we probably seem like the bad guys.
I bet those men have families. How will they be able to look them in the eye tonight and say, "No, little Vittorio, I wasn't able to keep the beach clear for Pablo Escobar's surf school. Yes, son, I have been demoted in the organization."
Well, do you think we should move?
Well, as a strategy, I think it has value in that it makes it look like those two did their job.
Great point. So, volleyball or drones?
All I know is that we want to head downwind from the surf school tent. I can't reconcile the smell of marinara sauce and burnt garlic with my beach experience.
I thought it was the smell of hair tonic. Well, heading toward the drones it is, Maggie. It's a shame the surfers had to pick this great stretch of beach.
Yes. And that, my friend, is both its blessing and its curse.
Yes. It's where the dedicated surfing zone syndicate has staked out its life's work. And because there's cosmic justice, it will also be their grave.
Hardly. You can't bury someone on a beach. They just wash up again.
Yeah, but how long does it take? I mean, could you get a couple of good hours of tanning in before they pop up?
It's all hypothetical anyway. Mr. Capablanco and his good fellows will probably live to ripe old ages. It's the sea air.
Yeah, they'll probably bury us.
But not in the dedicated surfing zone syndicate's dedicated surfing zone.
On the hour, every hour. As long as every hour is understood to mean 6 p.m. on Sundays, Men in Charge dominates the airwaves.
Fist fights, wrestling, roughhousing, or maybe just being at loggerheads. Hey, Lower Heights, for 40 years you've been going to Ken Jennings for all the finest altercations.
Hi, I'm Ken Jennings. I'm quite old now. And here at Ken Jennings Altercation Station, located in the west-facing half of Kiosk 23 at Lower Heights Mall, you can really get your frustrations out.
Me and the lads like to have a dust-up at Ken Jennings.
Hey, Lower Heights. We all know that for a long time, people thought that fisticuffs, street fighting, and real-life cage matches were illegal. And that means big fines for fighting in public. But the revised code of Lower Heights is ambiguous when it comes to fighting in private, especially where the combatants' intentions are not to harm each other, but just vicariously take out their aggressions on another human. That punches back, sublating your feelings of bitterness, rage, or smoldering condemnation for family, friends, co-workers, and even pets isn't against the law.
For years, me and the girls have been getting into arguments about how we should go and relax at the end of a hard work week. Ken Jennings gives us a safe space.
Where safe space means a space in which you're likely to be beaten roundly.
Ken gives us a space to work out our differences in constructive ways. And it's only $29.95 plus a cleaning deposit per altercation.
Bachelor and bachelorette parties. Couples reaffirming vows. James Carville and Mary Matlin. We take all sorts and kinds at Ken Jennings Altercation Station.
I say, myself and the fellows of Sir Redvers Henry Butler's 60th Rifles Regiment in the Second Opium War used to settle points of honor, like which chap's handlebar mustaches best expressed our love of Britannia and the good Queen Vic, with sabers.
Well, that's just a big mess to clean up, I say. The colonel and his men came down to Ken Jennings' altercation station. We put them into inflatable sumo suits in our huge rubber ring of death. And now everything's peachy keen in the 60th Rifles. Don't have someone to hash it out with? The altercation station will match you up with an opponent of approximately the same muscle mass and degree of rage so you can fling yourself against the universe and see if you bounce back.
This is Hans Fluker. I find the economy of violence intrinsic to Ken Jennings' altercation station to be worthy of further note and, of course, darkly fascinating.
I am Jacques de temps en temps. There is no other place in Lower Heights Mall in which the limits of facticity can be tested like Ken Jennings' altercation station. Except, of course, the Chili's restaurant.
Conflict is a basic fact of human existence. That's why you've got to hurry yourself down here to the altercation station between the Orange Julius and the Cinnabon in the Lower Heights Mall. Remember, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but only at Ken Jennings' altercation station.
And now it's time for Johnny Hambone, Library Bouncer. As you'll remember from last time, Johnny Hambone was engaged in an unfortunate dust-up about name tags at an academic conference on library bouncing at a downtown hotel. The police were called, and jail time was the inevitable result. We now join Johnny as he meets his new cellmate, Big Nell.
So you're Johnny Hambone, Library Bouncer.
Not anymore, I'm not. The dream is dead. Now I'm just Johnny Hambone, prisoner of chaos. But who are you? And what are you, a very large and dangerous-looking woman, doing in my cell?
They call me Big Nell, and I'm here because I find the accommodations in the men's correctional wing to be infinitely preferable to those in the women's correctional wing. Do you have a problem with that, library boy?
I don't think I like your tone, Big Nell.
Well, when you decide for sure one way or another, let me know.
Listen, Big Nell, I weigh 240 in ballet slippers, and I've got a neck like a fire hydrant. I'd choose my words more carefully if I were you.
Too bad for you, I'm not.
I'm afraid you've lost me, Big Nell.
That's because I've stopped paying attention, Johnny Hambone. Now, which is your bunk?
I'm not sure how the topic has shifted to my bunk, Big Nell. I just thought you should know about the expanse of my neck. It's partially obscured by my prison garb.
I'll just sweep your stuff off my new bunk.
Okay, you're good. I get that. But nothing can happen between us, Big Nell. It just can't.
You probably say that to all your female cellmates. I bet it doesn't work for them any better than it works for me, which is not at all.
I just don't want to arouse interest that won't be reciprocated.
Fair enough.
Ah, the call to breakfast. Biscuits dribbled with moistened cornstarch. As the German romantic philosopher Friedrich Schlegel once said, Freiheit der Frühstückszuswahl ist nur durch unsere Vorstellungskraft eingeschränkt. In English, that means freedom of breakfast choice is limited.
Limited only by our imagination. Duh. Do you think I was born yesterday, Johnny Hambone? We all know our Schlegel here in the joint. And if you're trying to cozy up to me, quoting Schlegel won't do it.
Well, it was worth a try, Big Nell. What's your work assignment?
The brewery, the night shift.
The brewery? Lower Heights Correctional doesn't have a brewery.
It does now. Why else do you think I smell like beer? What's your assignment?
The prison library. A dead-end job.
I'm sure they can't manage without you, Johnny Hambone. Don't they need you to, sit there? It must be exhausting.
Oh, I can sit there at the checkout desk better than anyone. And I check out middlebrow fiction to the inmates with a skill unmatched by anyone who might try to match me. But I'm not a librarian. I'm a library bouncer and intellectual. It's in my blood. But prison is a microcosm of the larger...
Sorry, Johnny Hambone. I lost interest even before you started talking. You're heading down to breakfast now, right? Good. I need a nap.
I'd bring you something back, maybe one of the damper biscuits. But I don't want you to get the wrong idea about us.
What? You're back already?
You know, Big Nell, your sarcasm is hurtful. I always thought prison would be a place of fellowship and mutual support. But no, not with you. You're destroying that ideal. You're destroying my dream, everyone's dream, of what prison life can truly be. I'm left with just the taste of ashes, wet ashes too. The worst kind.
That's all the time we have now for Johnny Hambone, Library Bouncer. Tune in next time when we'll hear Johnny say,
Big Nell, I brought you back an extra serving of biscuits and moistened cornstarch. But I suppose that means nothing to you, doesn't it?
Okay, Manly Druthers, I think I know what my second wish should be.
Okay, shoot.
Kevin, I just want to note that we didn't consult on this while the segments were running. So please don't involve me in any way in this second wish.
Okay, Kevin, what's your second wish?
Well, it's pretty amazing and all how you're able to grant wishes to mere mortals like us.
Yes, I suppose I am pretty amazing.
And let's face it, you're a good-looking fish.
Eat your heart out, Finding Nemo. And to halibut with Flipper the dolphin.
Dolphins aren't...
Manly Druthers means dolphin fish, Tony.
Oh, okay.
So, my second wish is to have all the powers of a magical mystery fish like you, Manly Druthers.
All the powers?
Yeah.
Exactly like me?
Yeah.
By your command.
Great, it worked on Kevin. Boy, oh boy, it's great to have legs, feet, hands again. Even to have an appendix, which I suppose is aptly named because it's just an appendix to everything useful your body does.
Kevin, where are you going?
What do you mean? I'm right here. Hey! Why am I floating in the middle of the studio? Did I get a contact high off of dry erase markers again?
The fish. Kevin, your stupid second wish has made you the fish. And Manly Druthers just walked out with your body, no doubt to smoke a pipe and drink a few bottles of Shenley's Cream of Kentucky Bourbon.
Does this mean that I have to go back into the lamp I bought from the Antiques Roadshow cast-off's traveling cart?
No, but it does mean you don't get to read the credits. So I will. And since Kevin barely exists right now, I'm going to thank our cast. Kevin Decker, Misha Schramm, Davis Hill, Mimi Marinucci, Steve Lloyd, Liz Rognes, Luke Hamburg, and Nancy Roth as Rita Heldenleben. We also need to thank the other three people who make up the four helpers. Misha Schramm, Carrie Boyce, Vern Windham, and the only man whose lactose intolerance makes him order cheeseburgers without the cheese, Brian Lindsay. And so, Kevin, this is where we began the episode. Remember when we teased the listener with this part at the beginning? With me cutting you off and the big revelation? Remember?
There is such a thing as over-explaining, you know?
Well then, over to you, Kevin.
I'm Kevin Decker, and like Tony said, welcome to Magical Fish in Charge. The fish in the title is plural.
The title is Men in Charge.
That's what I said. Men in Charge.
We'll return next week, listener, so you can check whether or not Kevin's brain has been reclaimed by the sea by that point.